Is this a Netflix thing?
It's actually a podcast.
What the fuck's a podcast?
You know, it's kind of like a radio show.
Call that radio.
My name's Nathan Saudi.
I'm Richard Wilson. We're both from Uncle Daddy.
And Uncle Daddy, I just listened to Bill sent me the song Blood. Sounds phenomenal. How would you describe the sounds of Uncle Daddy?
Fun, big, future.
The sounds of Uncle Daddy. Well, yeah, just like we're trying to do future pop kind of
groaning into the future.
Future groan.
Future groan, yeah.
It's sort of like drone groan.
There's no drone here. We're not into the drone.
I'm trying to, yeah.
The old three chord system, maybe four.
We're trying to pull London out of a hole.
Yeah, it's very tough. They're very dour down here these days.
Yeah, so I was actually in London. I was in Mexico for a few months, and then we came back and we played Dash the Hen Store.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were down for about a week. We went to see Meat Raffle. They were amazing.
Yeah, they're good to dance to these days. They've got a screw on.
And so how is it? So would you say that this, and obviously everywhere, I mean, Glasgow's suffering the now. Just, I think we're kind of blaming it on the cost of living crisis. But I mean, is it the same thing that's affecting London? Or because obviously we've got a bit of gentrification, but obviously London wins that game.
Yeah.
One of the reasons I left Glasgow was, well, I have a daughter, she's seven, so I had her in Scotland, and so I just chose to stay in Glasgow because really there was nothing happening musically, because I wanted to just lock down and take care of my daughter until she was a bit older. But it was like almost like ghost town, that place, when it comes to music now. I used to live there like back in 20 years ago. And that's where the music came from, isn't it? Really, a lot of it. A lot of innovative bands were coming from Glasgow, Scotland. Well, if they weren't from Glasgow, it was Glasgow who was showcasing them as well.
Yeah, there's a bit of a brain drain where it's, if you live anywhere else, I mean, in Scotland, I would even say anywhere in Scotland, because Edinburgh can't really compete with Glasgow. Yeah. So it's like if you live in a 100-mile radius or whatever, you're going to move to Glasgow.
Yeah, but now it seems that Glasgow is now like Edinburgh, it's like Aberdeen, it's like there isn't a cultural difference there now. And so I had to get, like, once my daughter was old enough, I had to get out of there to even have to be busy, to even do anything in music, really. Well, like, that has a future in it, you know, like a reason for doing it, rather than just a hobby.
How did you start working together?
We met at Dash the Hedge Store as well. I think I met you there, in the basement.
Yeah, we.
And then it's our friend Sam. We have a mutual friend who runs this label called Love Love Records. And basically through him, met him, and then came round here. This is his place. And then fucking he showed me his library, his portfolio. And I was like, holy fuck, man, I think you might be the best producer in the country. And then I fucking asked him, like, we got to work. And then I moved in.
Well, I've been doing like electronic music, like, jungle and acid, cut sort of brain dance reflex records kind of stuff, old school jungle acid, for like since like 2005, where I released an album on Love Love. We started Love Love with my music, and it's through that friend I had, well, through this label I've been on for like, it's almost 20 years now, that I met Nathan. Yeah, because the Love Love guy was working with Nathan for a little bit.
Yeah. I had a quick look at the bio, and there's a mention of Larry Love, who I know as well. What was his involvement?
He really helped us sort of finalize getting together. We met and we were like, I'd worked on one of Nathan's songs. I'd worked on actually some of Joe's songs, who's in Uncle Daddy. And the guy from Love Love was involved in some of that.
And then we organized getting Larry down.
Yeah, then Nathan...
I've known Larry for about since I moved to London, basically. He's kind of like a mentor, father figure, of such an uncle figure for Fat Whites. And like, he's always been around on the radar. And then,
because Larry's obviously a massive Alabama 3 fan, met them loads of times. And I was obviously a lot closer with Jake, who's a Glasgow boy. So RIP Jake. But I remember Jake telling me stories about, I think it was the Fat White family rehearsal rooms. Did he live next to it or something like that? I've got a vague.
Yeah, he lived upstairs to it, and he'd come down sometimes. I'd be like, hey, we're talking in some incomprehensible Glaswegian. I mean, like, what is he saying? Is he upset or is he what? I don't know. But then I got to learn that that's just how I was like, fuck me, he's some character, isn't he?
Absolutely.
We all know why. I fucking better know why. I fucking better know. Jake, the other front man, he died.
Jake was a lot of people thought that he was actually American because obviously he put on the American twang. Yeah. And then you actually meet him, they're like, what the fuck? Because he's not, I mean, he's strong for even living in Glasgow, do you know what I mean? It's proper. Yeah. A postal accent that he didn't lose a bit of even by touring the world. He didn't calm it down at all. So Alabama 3, was that, so did you just bump into them back in the day? So was this very early on in your musical journey?
They were just fucking...
they were doing
pubs. They were in pubs. We'd be like, it was pub, like, strictly kind of like pub band culture. I don't know, like fucking hanging out at different pubs. But one of the pubs that drew us all together was this one called Queen's Head. Still friends with the ex-landlord, Simon. But like, they'd always be there, and we'd be that's where we'd be starting Fat Whites, and they'd be there and like commenting, taking the piss, being funny, being supportive. And then fast forward to this day, I start working with Rich, and then I was working with Sam, but more like, come on, man, get to it. You got all like some music, you get to it. And then like, I organized me, Rich, Larry Love, and Sam to sit in a room and start this project. And then basically from that point on, we realized that it was kind of like Rich, Larry, and I who was kind of doing this thing, because Sam just ducked out of the room. He's like, oh, he's a bit wobbly. He's ducked out the room. And then we kind of like, we're like, oh, there's something happening here. And then we kept to it every Tuesday during winter. And then we've kind of got about half an album's worth of material with Larry Love, and we're going to go meet him in a bit to try and discuss moving forward.
We're going to start more, record some more after it's been almost a year since recording before. Now we've been working together and we've done some low-key shows. Now I think when we go into the studio or we sort of make new material, it'll be like, it'll go up a level.
Yeah, because we were virgins to each other whenever we were starting, really.
Yeah.
And now we're kind of like, we know
what
each other.
and
you were all vulnerable, yeah. Larry was very vulnerable for a while. Yeah. You know, but now we can growl a bit. You know?
What was the low-key gigs like? How did they go down? Where did you play and stuff?
Basically, we've got a pub now. Our new pub is the Earl Ferrers in Streatham. That's like, we rehearse there. We play all the gigs there. That's where we're practicing our live show. So they're all fun. They're like, we didn't know what it'd be like to start with. And then it's just like instantly like, yeah, this is it. This is doable. We need to like relax into the positions a bit more because it's fresh. It's like three of us singing, two of us just holding mics, and then one with a guitar. So it's like we've never really been up front and singing, all of us, before, but we're all just kind of naturally doing it because I think it's from the heart
and it's like
Larry's like that. Larry's a fucking soul man. You just he gets on there and you're like, you'll see him all like, and they'll get on, it'll be like, you're like, it's a pro, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's the hype, man. Yeah, he's got that muscle memory, that experience of just playing all these big shows, so it dives back into it. It's always quite mad when you see somebody that is so good just getting a wee bit nervous before a gig. I really struggled after lockdown for some reason. I think it's because we were always just performing all the time, and then it suddenly stopped. That sometimes I overthink things before I go on stage. Is there any? Have you got any tips for that before you go on stage to calm down?
Yeah, I think. Well, for me, I believe it's you're winding yourself up yourself. It isn't anything that's going on. For me, it's like just another day. That's the way I do.
I'm a great believer in star jumps.
But he's different.
I love star jumps. Every time I've star jumped before a gig. Not only I can't remember the gig, but I can remember the star jumps.
I mean, that's doing something with your energy instead of you working yourself up. You're doing star jumps. You know, you've got to focus that energy that maybe you're putting into your mind to just something else. Because soon you'll be playing and you don't care anyway, do you? That's what I feel like. Once you're doing it, you're loving it. So why is he so nervous? I don't know.
Or it's like a game of football where you want to give the audience a good game, even if you lose. Yeah, you know what I mean? The audience just wants a good game.
The thing with what we're doing is it's all really natural. We're not trying to do any tricks or anything forced. It is just what it is. So I'm not getting nervous going and doing it, really. I'm more nervous maybe about some crackling noise or something to do with equipment, because I'm doing all of that stuff. And maybe I have that to focus on to take my mind away from.
We're not using any narcotics. None of us drink or do drugs. We smoke a bit of hash or weed or whatever, but none of that stuff. So everything is just kind of organic.
It's like real, so... I don't feel there's much to be nervous about if you're honest. Like,
yeah, we're proud of the songs, so it's like that's like behind us. So it's like marching in with the fucking flag. You know the guys in the movies. Like, why the fuck is that cunt marching in first behind in front of the army? It's like kind of like that.
And how does it compare doing it sober? Do you? Because obviously
it's like a mild mix of. I can't be endorsing it, but this is a natural. It's like a mild mix of like an opiate and some methamphetamine.
It's natural.
You're like getting a very, very organic speedball. And that's heavy. So I'm kind of like, I want to do it all the time because I've got an addictive personality anyway. So, but this is just like, I've been fucking lying to myself for a large part of my life. Like, and a good rock and roll band is right fucking buzzy, but like I reckon I was getting the same buzz naturally anyway. I was probably sobering up on that stage, and then you realize you fucking the buzz you're going through, you can multiply if you're sober, because you can find where the buzz is, and you're like, oh, and then you can like start like bit of dough, start stretching it out, turn it into peace or croissants or whatever. It's kind of like that. You're able to find the dough.
Yeah, so then you end up not really nervous about going to play, and you want to do it. Like, you want to do it. And then when you're finished, you're like, oh, I don't want to stop. Let's do it again.
I definitely encourage it not to be like a kind of, don't be the naughty boy, but just like, it's a better buzz. If you're into music, that's the buzz. It's like, if you're into sex, you probably prefer it without a condom on, innit? It's kind of like that. That's the difference. I'd say.
And you remember it. And you remember it. I was wondering, you just mentioned earlier about how London's struggling a little bit with the music scene and stuff. You just mentioned that pub. Could you just repeat that again? Was that the Earth and Arms, did you say?
The Earl Ferrers. It's a bit of an odd name.
E-A-R-L-F-E-R-R-E-R-S.
Okay, mm-hmm. so has that got a little bit of scene happening around it now?
Well, it kind of not really, just yet. We're hoping to kind of inject a bit of life into it. It needs, like, it's got a whole courtyard we want to clear out so people can have fags and peace in the. And we're trying to, like, put a decent PA in there. It's got a decent PA, but a permanent one. It's, like, it's a bit scrappy, but it's good. It's got a good soul, and it's, like, the landlord's very welcoming. So, yeah, it's good. We'll be better in a month's time once we finish it.
Well, so obviously, there's such an amazing scene that sort of built around you guys. Obviously, I'm looking at it from Glasgow, but huge fans of Bad White Family and obviously Meat Raffle and stuff we mentioned earlier on. Were you surprised that Black Midi splitting up?
Well, they're like a fucking industry school band, going in their GCSEs, and like, this is, you're destined to be this. It's a bit like those bands, I don't think, naturally have that much longevity, because they're more like a modern business unit, yeah, where you build it to sell it and then build it another one to sell it. And it's just like, I never really got much, I didn't identify soul in their music, so I never really paid attention to them.
I don't know this band, Black Midi, so I missed the whole thing.
Well, you mentioned the word Destiny, Brian Destiny.
I'm changing to Netholian.
Right, okay. So, can we talk about Brian Destiny?
Yeah, sure. I'm just doing acoustic now with Brian Destiny.
Yeah.
Basically, Brian Destiny is just an alter ego. So, like, I could like, force myself into some other thing. And right now, he's just like on the acoustic guitar trying to write songs. Not necessarily, like, not for himself, but like for. Like, if there's other bands, I mean, so like, if I'm making a song and they're on acoustic guitar, I'll show it to Uncle Daddy, and if they like it, they might be like, yeah, or, you know, I used to be like that with Flat Lights, but I've had to step out for a while if my brother can wise up. But that's kind of what it's for, just to like make songs. I'm not like doing it for any other reason at this point. I kind of, that's what I enjoyed doing. I was doing some studio stuff before, but I think I was doing studio stuff to find out about Rich, basically. Trying, like, because I knew I was doing something that was like not the whole thing.
Yeah, I'm not so much a songwriter, I'm more the music.
He's like music production, and all so the mad sounds.
I do the Ronald Beatwife electronic stuff. And he does his songwriting.
That's kind of what this. That's kind of what Uncle Daddy is, in a way. It's like a fusion of like band world and electronic dance world, which I don't get why it's not really being exploited. Explored that much in British music, especially British indie music. You know what I mean? It's like the two worlds are really prominent, and they should be like, you know, tangling at least.
You're bringing a, like, say for example, you've got a song in mind and you bring it to yourself. Do you already have, do you think, oh, well, I've actually got a beat in mind that would work well with that? Or do you just start creating something from scratch? Or is it,
It can be either point. It can either be like he started something that makes me like say something, or I'll have something that's written on like a guitar with different chords. And I'll be like, listen to something he's made, because he's got shitloads. He doesn't stop making. I'll be like, hold on a second. I think this might work on that. And it kind of, yeah. So it's like a mix of
if we keep doing what we do anyway, it sort of comes together. So he has to keep Brian Destiny thing or the, what is it,
Netholian.
Netholian thing going. I'm having a bit of a break from all my electronic stuff, but I still do it. I'm just doing it more like for song-based stuff now than just dance music or club style. I'm trying to get that style in songs. Like,
we can send you some more of the tracks after this, by the way.
Like, I'd love to hear that.
For everyone that's kind of got... or replied to Bill's shout-out, we've shown more music so you can see what we're talking about, basically.
Yeah, because Blood
was the very first track we made together as well, which kind of was just by, we were all in the studio. Well, in the end we were, but we were just messing around on something I'd started, and Joe had put some guitar on, then Nathan came later on and put words down, and then it was really from Blood that we knew that, like, I couldn't take it myself and do something with it, and Nathan couldn't take it and do something with it, and Joe couldn't, so we had to do it together. That's why I was like, we all made this song, so we should all be doing it.
Yeah, it was
so we started from there, and we started to make more based on the fact that we're gonna be doing it.
It was a wild night.
And is it four? So is it four members according to the bio? It says
no. That's three. Larry Love. We need to figure out what Larry Love is. So I think Larry Love should just use his name, Larry Love, and then be like, you know, Larry Love featuring Uncle Daddy, or backed by Uncle Daddy, or. But it's Larry Love's his own.
We're still figuring that out really as we go, because none of it was really planned.
Yeah, so Larry Love's known as Larry Love from Alabama 3, so maybe he's seen it as an opportunity to explore another side of his character, perhaps.
Well, yeah.
Well, he's just so into music, in the culture of new music with the kids, and he needs to be doing it, otherwise he'll get depressed and, like, I don't know, that's all I see. It's natural for him to, and he's progressing, whereas a lot of people that maybe in his position, they're scared to do that, to join in with the kids.
And he's always busy. I mean, he'll do his big UK tour with Alabama 3, and then he'll be away to Australia or something, and then on the downtime, he's doing his acoustic tours as well.
Mm.
So he's always staying busy. So, but who's White Devil Disco as well, who I don't know anything about, but I love the tunes, but I'm a wee bit ignorant. Sorry, who's that?
That's Joe Pancucci. He's the other member of the band. He lives in another place to us. And that project there, that is where he started with Sam Fez, who we talked about earlier on, who was head of Love Love Records. So he's got this band, and I'm encouraging him to finish his album, but he's...
So I was working on some songs with Joe, who's a guitarist in our band, and he does some singing and harmonies. And then... What was I saying?
You were working on...
Yeah, I was working on some of Joe's songs, like maybe two or three of Joe's songs. And then that's how I got to know Joe. And then, but then we start to do this White Devil Disco, and Joe started to take more time to do Uncle Daddy than White Devil Disco for the moment.
I do want him to finish his stuff, though.
It's just because it's like his band. He's always had problems, like, maybe getting people that fit in the band and with his music.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I've had 55 band members.
There you go. It's kind of that kind of stuff. You want it needs to be a band, that kind of thing. But we might try and strip it down a bit and see if we can get it going.
The tunes are phenomenal. The tunes are brilliant. Yeah. From what I've heard, I've just heard a few bits and bobs.
There is one song finished, and he has a video and everything made, which might come out at some point, but it's a very nice video, a really good song.
Well, I'm trying to get him to, like, basically, because I'm doing Dash the Hench, I'm like, Joe, if we're going to release this, can you get on some more stuff, basically, so we can follow it through? Because if you just make one release and don't have anything to follow up with, it's always good to have your second thing made as you're about to release something. You know, that's what I've learned, because I'm like, it's not like I'm an expert, but like, that's what I've learned, and it's all.
Well, absolutely, you've got to take advantage of the momentum when it comes, absolutely, and you're an expert. You've been involved in loads of great records over the years. Is there any particular record that you're proudest?
No, like the record side of things, that's why I'm like proper buzzing about Uncle Daddy, because working with a proper producer, someone who really knows their shit, and I'm like, that's where my, a lot of like, that's why I kind of stepped out of Fat White. I thought like, I couldn't bring Fat Whites any further. The live show is kind of like, it's wicked. But the recordings, I'm like, I wasn't happy with. So I'm like, nah, I'm not, I've never been completely. With some of the recordings that we've got, Uncle Daddy's got right now, yeah, I am. I am like, kind of like, oh, yeah, I'm happy. So there, yeah, that's that. Well, that's how I feel. But
I think it's when you're in a band and you're working on albums, it's really hard for anyone to achieve what they want it to be in their
Yeah, it's
their
really
mind.
Hard because you got to share big time.
There's so many people involved in who's selecting who to work with you on whatever aspect of the music, and it filters it down so much that what dilutes it, you know, that your first goal is sort of disappeared.
Yeah, you've got a lot of strong characters in the bands. So I suppose everybody, when you're at the early stages of a song, you've all maybe got a different interpretation of how this song's going to sound at the end.
I mean, this can happen with us. There's three of us. It can happen in our situation. And we already all have it, like, kind of experience of it. Still happens, so.
And when it comes to the live show, I mean, obviously, are you aiming to finish? Have you got a deadline in mind to finish an album? Or actually plans?
I just think, like, no deadlines. This band doesn't feel like it needs deadlines because it works. I don't know, an album pretty soon. That'll be good to have one done by the end of the year.
I mean, we have like more than an album's worth of material, and we make more, but it's more about playing as much places as we can to as much people as we can,
getting out
wherever, and we will through that put out a new song now and again until I don't know.
We need more people to hear it, basically. So that's why we're trying to like get press out with as many people as possible.
No one knows who you are. Putting out a whole album to me is
suicide.
I mean, you could, I just don't think you do that. You get some appreciation maybe first, or some kind of following.
Yeah, you want people to be excited for the album drop.
And not be like forcing them to listen to this. You need to listen to this. I'm not really into that. I don't even do that with my other stuff. I don't force feed people that. I like it to be organic. People to share. Look what I found. You should listen to this. Look what I found. Like, people enjoy sharing then. So in that sense, I think putting out little tracks now and again while playing shows is just a better way to create some culture rather than force feeding your product. It's like there's enough product selling already when you scroll down. Why are you going to join? I don't want to join in this stuff.
I don't want to wait.
I'd rather make a meme that's taking the piss out of us doing that. You know.
Well, have you got any plans for Glasgow? Coming up to Scotland?
Oh, we need.
We will when we start getting ready to actually travel further.
I think once we have an album in the bag and we can like show that to some people that's in the bag, then we can like, you know, say, you know, the way that the industry works, fucking some booking agent will be like, all right, what's your release schedule then? Because I like this. And he'll be like, oh, well, we've got this album we can release at the end of the year. They want to hear all this shit. I've been through all that stuff. So we just, play and fucking just keep making new tracks.
And is it the live show? Are you keeping it to three people, or have you got any plans to extend it, or are you just happy keeping it as a three?
I reckon three people get everyone in the band better.
Yeah, it's the
learn some new like areas of your body which you haven't accessed before and stuff like that.
Maybe a dancer.
maybe two dancers, but band members, no, breathe hard enough.
It is.
I just don't need a drummer, do you?
No.
So that's one thing. I mean, we've got the never-ending problem with with drummers because they're either insane or they're in 75 bands.
I mean, for me, the drums...
If they're good, that is.
They need to evolve a bit or something. I don't know. The drums have been the same since... it's like saxophone. I don't know. For me, the drums... A drum kit on stage, like you are restricting your groove and your pace and your whole song. If you've made a song in a studio and you want to use drums on a stage, you have to change the song. You can't think you're going to do it the same. You have to do a different version of the song live. So it's like a whole other game. Mm. I have a lot of live experience with professional bands and what, and yeah, it's. You either need to have your drummer is the whole band. So if you can't find the drummer to carry your whole show live, then they ain't really gonna carry, in my mind.
Yeah, you're only as good as your drummer.
And the beats for me in the club, my experience at clubs and getting people to dance and enjoy themselves is the solid groove, and the Uncle Daddy for me is got, you know, it's about that. It's about the environment, the vibe in the room, the groove and the feeling, the sound. And for me, the drum kit is just sometimes a bit too nasty, depending on your drummer.
Depending on the drummer and also depending on the kind of room you're playing as well. If you're playing in a kind of sort of smaller venue, then there's that kind of sort of echo that comes off the drum kit sometimes that isn't ideal.
Yeah, we have this problem with the rooms just by using the PA and the drum beat. You know, the room, the problems you have with the rooms, you know, bouncing around. It might suit too much high end, too much mid. It's like nippy. And so, but I can control all of that. The drums, it's like you're just stuck with it. But I mean, if you're a band, you need the drummer. You need it with, like.
I've been riding with a drum machine, though, for fucking years because. Even writing, if you're writing, you just want a little whatever, really, just to fucking get in, because no one's going to sit there and look for you.
When you're doing songs and you want to perform them, you need a drummer who's a drum machine, not a drummer who wants to be a drummer.
Basically, yeah.
So we would just be finding a drummer that would just be like a drum machine, me telling them, no, no, no. And it's like, you know, no one's going to take that. No one will take that.
I got a drummer that doesn't talk back.
That's it. You know, and it, like, oh, if we had that added to this, we wouldn't have probably got this far yet. We'd be
what's the perfect live room experience? Because obviously, if it's got that more electronic sound, would you be wanting to be on it? Something like a kind of a late night, midnight slot, or what kind of room are we talking? A club?
Well, we did a show in Soho in a cinema, and we brought a PA into the cinema, and then I routed just the subs into the cinema subs, and like the 808s were wobbling, like the whole room kind of thing. It's like you want the warm kind of club environment, really. I guess something we're all about the subs and the bass. The ladies love the bass.
Ladies love the bass.
Like, that's my experience of like 20 years playing in clubs. Like, I know what it does, and we need that. And you won't get that with like a band with a drummer.
I think the Jazzers got some of that, though, didn't they, with the old...
they've got their boom, boom, boom. Still, you need someone who can do that. You know, that's quite much stuff.
So what he's saying is he's a digital jazz drummer.
I don't know.
Many abilities.
Since I'm doing the jungle and all of that, I really mastered drums, like, 10 years ago. I'd been doing drums for 10 years. I mastered, like, I can program drums like a real drummer, or I'm like the complete opposite. It's like, so it's to try and just keep this. That's what keeps it future. That's what keeps it like interesting. Otherwise, for me, what I'm saying is in London, everyone's playing songs from 20 years ago. The same format, the same sounds, the same styles. And anyone that maybe tries something new gets kind of put down by all of these people that are stuck in their ways and own the space.
Yeah, bring Uncle Daddy down.
They think they own this place, but it's like, maybe they did 20 years ago. Come on, everyone's on their phones, hyperactive. They're hyper now, and you just want them pulling back to like smack town. You know, and it's like that was all right when it was dark and everyone was burning coal. You know what I mean? Throwing shit out their windows or something. But like now, it's a bit hyper. There's robots and shit going around. You know what I mean?
We need to think about the robots.
Before you know it, digital artists are going to overcome these 20-year-old. It'll be AI artists. Not even real people are going to be the future.
Actually going to be my next question about AI and stuff. What is the future for music?
If people don't come in and like us and try and do something future modern, the digital companies are going to create AI artists that are going to do it anyway. And they'll make sure it covers up all this old 20-year-old shit because they'll own it. The AI will be able to push it down.
So you need to make sexy bass music so the robots can shake their booty.
It's kind of like that. Just like music for
Terminator. I didn't mention that chapter.
Like organic music for the airwaves. Organic, like made by humans with human soul and the words with a meaning. There's actually a reason for this, not just our own like egos. It's like that kind of stuff, not even just the sound you need just to carry the message.
The robotic overlords try and take over and kill all of humanity. Yous are either going to be able to seduce or sedate them.
What?
With Uncle Daddy featuring Larry Love.
We'll try and keep some organic flavor within the future of the music that's going to be played on the radio and streamed.
I think the two things can go well, hand in hand, collaborate well with each other, the future technologies and humans. So the shared human experience is still going to exist. So
I actually was Friday there, I was at my friend's house. He's not a musician or anything, but he paid for an AI music app. I think it's like £30 a month. And he was just showing me how it works. You type in your lyrics or you type in a song about it, and then it creates a song. Now, obviously, every single song was absolutely terrible. It didn't have any soul or anything. But it was quite weird to see, them taking it random topics and turning it into, I don't know, it was like pop punk or even the grime stuff actually sounded not bad.
Yeah, I get it.
But, yeah, obviously, what you mentioned, the other record labels are going to go, why are we dealing with humans that want to pay rise, that are going to say no to certain things? So the labels will start in doing that. So how do we keep the soul, I suppose? I suppose the question I'm trying to say is, should real creative people be worried because the robots will never be able to compete, or will the robots be able to become creative, if you know what I mean?
I don't think there's anything to worry about.
Yeah, I wouldn't think.
You're definitely going to die.
It's like London's different for me than anywhere else in the world. So it's like how we deal with it will be different to like any other cultures. So I think there will be a fear of it here because there's already a fear of like kind of thing we're doing, which is slightly like different futuristic. So, I mean, here they'll always still try and stay in their 20-year-old hole. Even with all it going around, and they'll probably be happy with that, I think. It's not that... it's maybe a good thing that this stuff's happening because something needs to force like a change of like... I don't know.
It's an epochal shift. It's not just like industrialization, I don't think. It's more like going from Bronze Age to Iron Age, where the guys were bronze, were doing whatever they're doing, and then like the guys with iron came and they're like, what are you doing? And they're like, oh, we're doing this. It's like, you're not. And they're like, what do you mean we're not? And then they're like, well, test this. And then they tested it and they were like, oh, shit. You can either do it peacefully or let it
be forced upon you in an epochal shift. And I do think we are hitting an epochal shift because some of the possibilities that are right around the corner are totally unfounded. I mean, today, just today, guys, I saw an advert for an umbrella that hovers over your head. It's from your phone, and you got umbrellas soon. That's like Blade Runner shit. Like, that's really possible. It's not exactly like energy.
Probably not good for your battery life, but it can be done.
It's cool and future as fuck. And if you really think about what it could be like in 5-10 years, it's like, that is like sci-fi movie. So it's going to happen. Try and work with it because... The Iron Age people, the Iron Age is there. And if we're on bronze, are they going to be like, look, what are you doing? It's like, you kind of have to respect the iron because it's just been invented and you can't do anything about it. You're going to be, no, bronze, just put more bronze on top of bronze. No.
You can only repeat, I think, the same thing, same kind of art for so long before it's not art anymore. It's just like plastic, you know. There's plastic all around your room, like all around you right now. You're not aware of it. You're plastic around your microphone, plastic on your headphones. Like, the more you repeat something, it becomes unaware to your brain. Your brain starts to just take it for granted. I mean, and it for me, it's been going on so long, some of the sounds and music, something needs to change it. And if it's AI that's going to help us sort of realize this, then that's cool.
Well, it's the same way the synthesizer did it in the
50s. It's happened with the synths. People, like, we didn't accept a synth as being music, you know.
The difference between now and the 60s, I'd say, because the shared human experience is still the same, you know, in between death, there's a big story filled with all these activities. That's the shared human experience. But in the 50s, whenever they were getting this technology, it appears to me like there was more enthusiasm for making music that anticipated the future. And now we're in a similar kind of like technological, whoa, it's going right up. Whoa, let's go. But they're like, no, they're trying to make music, which is imitate music made from the past, which was trying to predict the future. So I'm kind of like, why have we got ourselves in this mindset? And that's why it's very, that's why I'm like, whole hog in with Rich, because it's like he sees this. In the band world, there's none of this kind of fervor for this kind of new technology. And I'm like, what? All the music we like in the 50s, 60s, 70s, it was all like this. Why is this different? I mean, like, look, you can press a button and this happens. You order a car, boom. It's like, you're telling me it's not like moved forward a bit. Taxi, yeah, right.
It's just the
Uber, bro.
It's just that the AI affects not just the music, it affects the technology, it affects all like art, JPEGs, all videos, like lots of industries. So it's like the synthesizer was mainly just music and engineering. It changed some engineering, but yeah, so it's not just music it affects. So it's gonna, but all of these other things affect music, technology, the TV, video, art also affects music. So it's like a lot. It seems like probably quite overwhelming compared to any of other evolution.
That's a brilliant answer. And last question: is there any bands that you do think are doing something interesting or futuristic? You would recommend that our listeners check out?
All right, this is the problem. They're called body horror. That's not the problem. They're body horror. But the problem is, I don't much appreciate the recordings. But if you check out their live footage, there's a live gig at the Windmill, you'll get the point. It is still bad format, but they're using like electronics in a really nice way.
With the electronics, so they have a bit of the... With the electronics.
It sounds mad and futuristic. It's so cool. So body horror, that's the shout.
That's amazing. And how, for anyone that's listening to Uncle Daddy, how can they check out your stuff and when are the releases happening?
We've got a demo out on YouTube and SoundCloud. It's called Blood. We're going to hold off from Spotify because we're just going to be like a... You know, releasing like demos from?
It would just be Instagram. Can we post everything, Instagram. Update everything through Instagram? You can find all these this information through Instagram is the main.
Well, TikTok, always... I think Joe started.
There's
TikTok.
A little bit of that, but it is initially Instagram we're using because that's pretty much what everyone's on, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not. I've tried to do TikTok. It didn't really work for me.
Yeah,
but I guess the point that I've just got, you know, so many different bands, different podcasts. And it's like there's only so much social media you can do.
That's it.
So, but Instagram seems to be where my age group is mostly. Is everybody's got a lot of people have ditched Facebook, but they haven't quite committed to TikTok yet. So that's a great way to do it, man. I'll put a link for anyone who's listening to check it out. Love that demo, and I did notice it on the press release that Bill did say to message him for more demos. So yeah, please, I'll send you the email, definitely, man, because I'd love to hear the rest of it. And thank you very much for taking the time to talk to me.